Well, we're back from South Dakota and Brian's wedding. So, if you kind of get a little different version of Brian for this episode, you'll know why. Welcome to episode 38 of Twist1.com. We're going to jump into topics involving the U.S. Open, everything that entailed the U.S. Open, and wow. Next topic we're going to get into is recent developments in Jason Grimsley. Who would have ever thought that we'd ever talk for two straight weeks about something related to Jason Grimsley? And the third main topic we're going to talk about is, I honestly can't believe I'm saying this, World Cup. So, having said that, before we get into our normal routine of getting into what beers we're drinking and things like that, I do have to get something out of the way. I'd like to apologize to Trent from Canby, Minnesota, who happens to be Brian's new nephew. I misspelled your name and misspelled the name of your city in a past episode. You emailed in a question. We appreciate that all the time. I know you have all of our episodes downloaded on your iPod, and you showed me on said iPod this past weekend that I misspelled the name of your city. Sorry about that. And Trent, when you do listen to this episode, apologize to Taylor, your little sister. I'll never ask her to dance at a wedding again. So, apparently, the 11-year-old Taylor does not like to dance with me. So,
and that puts her with just about every other woman on the face of the earth.
Pretty much. So, Taylor, you keep good company. So, having said that, let's get into normal stuff. Brian, this is your last episode for a couple of weeks before you head off to Puerto Vallarta and your honeymoon.
Yep.
Which I'm glad you were able to come back for another episode of Twist One before you did.
Yep.
I'm sure Shauna was glad to have you come back too.
But well, I did absolutely nothing today but open presents and put pictures up on the internet.
Did you?
Yep.
On your website or?
Yep. Cool. No. It's on Flickr.
Oh, okay. Cool.
You have an email for me, so you can go look at it.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check that. Check my email more often.
I'm drinking Dos Equis.
Dos Equis? Was it a wedding gift?
No.
Will you be drinking a wedding gift?
No.
Okay. You didn't get alcohol as a wedding gift?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But you won't be drinking it.
Well, not
wine.
In the near future. At our first anniversary.
You got like wine and stuff. But I'm saying, episode of Twist One, will you ever be drinking...
No.
A wedding gift.
No.
Actually. That stinks. I haven't even given you my wedding gift yet. Maybe I might take it back and still sitting in my house. I forgot it. Maybe I'll take it back and get you just a lot of money's worth of alcohol. That way, this is what else Greg got me. It'll be an episode like 60. This is what else Greg got me. I'm drinking Rolling Rock. I just saw the green bottle. That's it.
Okay.
What do you got?
Hansa. Made in Bergen, Norway.
Very nice.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Going with the Norwegian beer.
Yep. Got a cousin who works there.
How many cousins do you have?
Bergen?
Tons.
Bergen?
Well, I mean, number. 20, 30?
Closer to 60.
Wow. I didn't know you Norwegians bred like Catholics. So, Brian, any housekeeping you want to get out of the way before, any technical housekeeping you want to get out of the way before you... And south of the border?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, next couple of weeks, it'll just be me and Carl.
So if there are any problems next week or the coming week, blame Carl.
Yes.
It's not blame Canada anymore, it's blame Carl.
Yes.
Blame Carl. Everyone else does. So.
Yeah, we're going to blame Carl because our responsibilities before the show starts in the past month has been Carl shadowing Brian. Make sure he knew what he was doing, and me watching TV, because everyone knew I'd forget anyway. So, having said that, we'll jump into the first topic. We're going to talk about the U.S. Open. I know Brian, for one, probably just saw the recap and all that stuff, because I know that you were...
Actually, I have no clue.
Okay.
I got home at 7 o'clock last night, and I went out with my parents, and actually got home and laid down on the couch at like 9:30.
Nice.
Just watched a movie and zonked out after about 30 minutes.
Nice. So, anyway, long story short is, Phil's up by two strokes or three holes to play. He actually hits the ball on his drive into hits the ball into a garbage can on 17, he's
into, I did, I missed it, but
into the garbage can.
You know, but in Phil's defense, okay. Anyway, okay. Let me get this out real quick. Then on 18, when all he needs is, he needs Parr to win this thing outright, Bogey to go into a playoff with Jeff Ogilvy, and he
ends up double bogeying.
He pulls out his driver, shanks it, slices it, and then second shot hits it off the tent. Second shot hits a tree, only hits it 25 yards up. Third shot hits in the sand, you know. Fourth shot hits it over into the rough. Fifth shot hits on the green, gets in for a six. So Ogilvy ends up winning this thing outright. Phil ends up tying a couple other guys and ends up, you know, finishing at six over. Now, here's the thing. Everyone all day today on all of my sports radio shows talk about, you know, choking and how much Phil choked. I'll go to you first, Carl, because I know that, you know, you did wake up for the 18th hole. Do you think it was a choke?
No.
Thank you. Now, why?
Phil wasn't the only one to put up a double bogey on 18 that day.
Yes. And?
USGA tends to make those courses, like, next to impossible to play golf on. I haven't seen it rough that high ever, period.
Yep.
It looked higher than a normal US Open.
Yep.
It was...
5 inches?
Yeah.
Now, let's keep something else in mind. Jeff Ogilvy chips in from off the green on 17. Chips off the green, hits the ball, actually, in the hole.
He got lucky.
To save par. And that's how he finishes at his plus, you know, at his plus five. He doesn't hit that. He hits it even close the way that he was intending on doing. They're playing in their playoff.
Today.
And
they're finishing up right now.
Yes. And not only that, but here's the other thing that Steve Elkington brought up on a radio show I was listening to, and not a lot of people talked about. Phil Mickelson that day hit two fairways on the whole day. 2 of 14 fairways. That's not choking. That's having a bad day. Everyone's had a bad day in their life. Everyone has a lot of bad days in their life. He was having a bad day. So in Phil's defense, and he has said this before, everyone said, well, his caddy should have taken his driver and smashed it over his knee and given him his 4-wood. Well, what's the difference if he's having a bad day? If he hits his 4-wood and shanks it, or if he hits his driver and shanks it? At least if he hits his driver and shanks it, he's closer to the hole. You know, at least he has a puncher's chance. I do not blame Phil. And you know what? I think, and I've heard this, I heard this later. Brian, tell me what you think about this, because this has nothing to do with the results. Do you think that because Phil took chances and didn't want to go, let's say, I mean, I guess the stupid way of putting this would be 7-iron, 7-iron, pitching wedge, putter, win. You know, I guess the conventional thing would say 4-wood, you know, whatever, you know, par out, in other words. Play it safe. He went for it.
He was up.
He was up. All he needed to do was par that hole to win.
Sure.
So let's say that he plays extremely conventional, extremely conservative, and wins it. Would you have more respect for him or less respect for him than the fact that he wanted to go for it and win this thing with a little bit of class and a little bit of, you know, I don't want to say riding on a white horse, be the white knight on the white horse, but I'll say win it with some style.
Yeah.
I think
I'm like Tom Osborne, and to win the national championship and the Orange Bowl. Rather than just to win the national championship.
Yeah.
With a 30-30 tie against Miami in 1984, I think it was, or 83. I'm for this whole, for him going for it, rather than just playing it safe. It's how sports should be, I guess, rather than playing it safe. I don't know what really more to say.
He wasn't the coach. I thought Devaney was the coach.
The van?
Yeah. What's the coach back then? It was Osborne?
Tom Osborne.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Osborne? Okay. Oh, I didn't realize he was coaching that long.
You know, and the other thing is, let's keep in mind that, you know, Montgomery did the same thing. Montgomery had the easiest approach shot of any professional golfer. But the thing is, he mishit it by 2 yards. if he would have hit that shot 2 yards further, it would have rolled to the hole instead of away from the hole. Fear missed a 3-foot putt.
I got a question.
Yeah.
About the whole garbage can thing.
Yeah.
Where was this garbage can at?
It was way off the fairway. It was where the fans stand.
So it wasn't OB.
No, it's not considered out of bounds. In fact, it's called it's a lot. You get a free drop.
Okay. I was wondering, like, how do you play that?
Technically, think about it. When you and I go golfing, you hit a ball that's not out of bounds.
You kick it a couple times.
Well, no.
Well, that's great.
Shut up. But you hit a ball that's not on the fairway, but it's where people would be standing if anyone would ever watch us.
Sure.
They put a garbage can there. Well, that's considered an unnatural thing.
Sure.
So you can take your ball and drop it. They'll just move the garbage can.
Yeah.
So.
But it gets a favorable.
So did
like drop?
Yes.
Did Phil take his ball out of the garbage can?
Of course. Well, he would have to. I would think. I don't know the USGA rules on that. I would think he would have to. I don't think anyone else is allowed to touch your ball.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, I've seen it before. I've seen balls land on some crazy objects before. In people's laps.
No.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a lap.
Did I look it up?
I've seen a ball land in a lady's lap. And I do not know the result. I do not quote me on what happened. But I thought that they had to get that lady to stand up, and as she stood up, she had to lift up her chair and back up, and then the player had to pick up his ball and then do a drop from it because they felt it was inappropriate for the golfer to pick up the ball from her midsection.
That's
so
fair.
I thought, and they had a tour professional that had to like make that determination. That's how weird some of these guys are.
But again, golf's a very, it's all about the rules.
Yes.
It's all about the sportsmanship and the rules. Very much like curling.
Yes. It's all about, you know, exactly. So, having said that, you know, I think that we've all determined that it wasn't a choke. It was more of like a guy just trying to win with a little class. And I guess,
again, to my defense, Phil, he's not the only one that threw up a double bogey or probably someone threw up a snowman up on 18 too.
Yeah.
Who was that guy in the British Open like 10 years ago?
Jean Vandeville.
Vandeville.
Yeah.
He choked.
Now, that is considered a choke.
Yes.
Because he hit it in the water, what, twice?
Okay, I think that's considered a choke because...
It's the last hole.
It was the same situation. It was the same situation. It was the 18th hole. I think the difference is why that's considered a choke is because A, he had a one-stroke extra lead, and B, he never had a natural hazard in his way.
Yeah.
Phil had a tree in his way for 2 shots.
Yeah.
Where he should have went around it, but Phil's a different golfer. You have to give Phil the benefit of the doubt because Phil can cut a tree.
But didn't he hit it in the water and then he tried to hit it out of the water?
Yes, where he could have taken a drop.
And it came back into the water.
Yes, he could have taken a drop. So, yes.
So he was taking a chance with that.
But the difference is I think Phil has gained enough points as far as reputation.
Sure.
Where people are going to say, some people are going to, where people aren't going to criticize him as much before, they're going to criticize him after if it doesn't work out. Whereas Jean Vandeville, people were saying as he was doing it, my God, I can't believe he's doing this. Johnny Miller did say, this is stupid, why is he doing it? But he was the only one. Everyone else is pretty much, you know, oh, this is gutsy, but, you know, at least give him kind of credit for it, you know. But, gotta move on to the next topic. Next topic we're going to jump into. If you have any comments on that, I'm sure we'll get into it again, because I'm sure more things will come up about it. Next topic we're going to jump into is the latest developments in the Jason Grimsley situation. David Segui came out this week with an ESPN. He's on ESPN with like a sports reporters type thing. Not a sports reporter, I'm sorry, behind the lines or whatever, outside the lines. And with Jeremy Schapp, we did an interview where saying that he was one of the names that was redacted from Jason Grimsley's article, saying that, you know, Jason Grimsley mentioned him as one of the names that used HGH. So he wanted to get out in front of the article, quote unquote. So said he took HGH legally because he's got some sort of a growth deficiency. Apparently it's these drugs that he was taking is illegal by Major League Baseball for the regular person because it you know, enhances your body mass, whatever, blah, 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 but and prescribed a lot for people with dwarfism. And Jason Grimsley mentioned his name, called him up and said, hey, just so you know, I was under a lot of pressure, I did mention your name. You and I had this discussion back in 2004 when we both played for the Orioles. Blah, 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 that's the story. I'm going to give you guys a comparison story. Tell me if you guys agree and or disagree. My senior year of high school, I had a huge drinking party at my cousin's house. They were all out of town. Out on a farm, big party.
So you were doing something illegal?
Exactly. School finds out about it, and we have a policy at our school where there's no drinking by athletes. If any athlete is caught drinking, found out to be drinking, they are suspended for that season. Or the next season of a sport they're playing in. And I was in the office of the principal, the athletic director, and the dean of students, and my dad has been a football coach at that school. That time it was 25 years. And they were all in there yelling at me, complaining, you know, bitching. They all had their little yellow notepads out, wanting to know who was all at the party. I gave them a long list of names of who was at the party. I gave them lists of people who, A, never went to the school, B, graduated from the school, or C, were people like me who were already done with their senior year of their football season and weren't playing any other sports, so there was really nothing they could do to them as far as athletics were concerned. I never once squealed on a basketball player, a winter sports athlete or a spring sports athlete, which I'm guessing, do you think that's what Jason Grimsley did? He pretty much read out a bunch of retired guys, insignificant guys, guys that don't matter, and guys that are retired.
Is that what's coming out at this point?
Right now, if only one guy's name is out, and it's guy that retired.
There's just one guy?
Right now, he's the only guy that's been officially said, and he's A, insignificant, and B, retired. Do you think the other 9 to and 11 names are also like that?
And also C, too, he's taking this because it was prescribed.
Yes. So it's all insignificant. I mean, I gave a list of probably 50 people that were at this party, and every time I gave another name, I had all of these officials at the school saying, no, we don't care. We don't care. Just like I'm sure that the FBI, whoever, was looking down this list saying, yeah, when are you going to get to Barry Bonds? When are you going to get to so-and-so? When are you going to get to so-and-so? Do you think it's, I mean, granted on a very much smaller scale, but do you think it's the same type of thing where Jason Grimsley, A, did what he had to do to get out of hot water with the federal government, and B, try to protect his own backside?
Yes, I think that's entirely possible.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking he probably did that. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Logical to me as well.
It just seems like a safe way to save face and not have a lot of follow-up knocking down the doors by the federal government. At least you can go up to David Segee and say, you know what, I had to do something. And I had all these names in my head of all these guys I knew, and I knew that you were one name that wasn't going to get, you know, anyone in a lot of heat. You know, I knew that you were legal, you know, or what, you know what I mean? So I'm just kind of curious to think that that was his motive. I mean, we'll find out, obviously, but, you know, this is kind of a hot topic, and there's no reason why we can't at least speculate on it a little bit.
I'm sure that, well, it would be more interesting to see when the other 4 or 5 names come out. You dropped
they
6.
They said it's like 10 to 12.
Oh, 10 to 12? Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll find out when more names come out.
Yeah.
But so far I'm liking that theory, and makes Mr. Grimsley a pretty intelligent guy to think quickly on his feet like that.
Yeah.
Or he has a good lawyer, or...
Or someone told him in advance, if something ever happens, you better start talking, you better start chirping to get him off your back, but you better start chirping about the right stuff. So, you know, make sure you have your I's crossed and your T's dotted. So, and by the way, I know I said that wrong.
I know.
Yeah.
I was about to say something.
No, I know. I just want to get that one out of the way, because I was driving home from South Dakota with a huge hangover yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, you did?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm sure you're not the only one in this room to make that statement.
I was up really early.
Yeah, I know you.
Down there greeting everybody as they were leaving.
You didn't greet us when we left.
We had like 4 or 3 hours of sleep.
By the way, the 2 meat breakfast next door at the bowling alley, do not suggest it. We didn't do it. We walked in, looked at it, passed on it.
It actually probably could have been quite good, but I was as green as the vegetables were, and so I just said, I can't eat a buffet.
Did you guys go across the street to the bar afterwards?
No, we had to go in the bowling alley.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when the police officer asked me to dispose of my drink outside of the gas station, so I cordially obliged. Anyway.
There's a cop there?
Yes, there's a fine officer. Very nice to me.
Okay. There's a state patrol inside, too.
Fine officer. Very fine. So, no one cares about that on this show. So, we'll jump into our third topic. Our third topic we're going to jump into today about the World Cup. Specifically, the United States versus Italy. Ends up in a 1-1 tie where Italy accidentally scores the goal on themselves. But the United States gets a couple of red cards, a couple of yellow cards, in a game that was so poorly officiated. I'm gonna say this right off the bat. We were all at Brian's wedding.
And none of us saw this.
None of us saw the actual live game. However, I can honestly say I know Brian didn't. I can't speak on behalf of Carl. I actually watched the highlights of what I would like to say is any way I'd ever like to watch a soccer game in my entire life on ESPN, because they showed they showed any play that mattered. It took about 14 seconds. And I don't know a lot about soccer. I quit playing soccer when I was 11 years old. My brother played until he was about 13. But I think that we got the...
I had a career in kickball. I could I'm pro in that.
Very nice. I think we got a serious European, scoogey. I think that they did everything they could to make sure that the United States did not get a win in that game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was...
I heard a red card.
There were two.
I saw blood on a guy's face, and I'm like, man, it must have been physical.
No, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it wasn't... I mean, it was like me going like this to Carl, and an Italian guy was falling over on a push like that. It was, and for those of you who weren't watching this, because you can't, I just tapped Carl on the shoulder, and an Italian guy would fall over, and the United States guy would get a red card. I mean, you're done. And that puts the United States down. Not only that, but you only have a limited substitution there. Now, granted, Bruce Arena, from what I understand, you only have a limited substitutions to make throughout the course of the game.
Three.
Yeah, and he didn't make all of them.
Yeah.
And, but I understand if you have good momentum going and you like the way your team is going, you don't change. You like the pace that the game's going, don't do it. That's fine. I'm not criticizing anything a soccer coach is going to do because you obviously know more than I do. But I guess what I'm saying is that do you think there's any chance that we're going to be able to beat Ghana on Thursday? I mean, with the way that this game ended up, it seemed like we just got totally just...
Explain
we got jobbed.
Yeah. Were the players playing hard?
Every one of the American players were playing hard. Every one of the Italian players were playing hard. At some points, they're like, you're blowing the whistle? It's like, there were some times when I was watching the highlights.
What were the sportscasters saying about it on ESPN?
Here's another one, Well, actually, it wasn't sportscast.
What was their idea of... Was this a little
Eric
lopsided?
Eric Ronaldo was saying pretty much things like, this is a controversial, play, and, keep in mind that these referees have been suspended by, the league in times past.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for things that have happened. But, the thing that...
For getting money under the table or something?
I don't know for what.
No, were they French? Like the French judge?
I don't know. I don't know if it's the same type of...
I don't know a lot about ice skating. So.
Yeah, I don't want to go conspiracy theory here, but...
It explains a lot why America has never won on European soil in the World Cup.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And that's why you wonder why they do so well on American soil. Is there just this bias against these continents? And if there is, that's fine. But just let me know in advance. So I don't have to hype up and start watching this, because I know that we're going to get the Royal European screw job before we even get into this whole thing.
Now, who held the World Cup in, was it 2002? Was it Japan or Korea or both?
It was in Asia.
It was in Asia.
In Korea.
It was in Korea. So I guess we just need to get the Korean judges, because obviously they'll be our referees, because they'll be honest at least.
Well, maybe. But, I don't know, I just...
Maybe.
Yeah, you never know. I don't know. I just... To me, it just seemed like when you see soccer players, A, exaggerate, that's pretty evident.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious.
Quite a bit.
But at the same time, when I'm watching highlights of a play, and you know going into the highlight that the reason they're showing you that highlight is because there's going to be a penalty, and the players even keep playing after it, that it's like the referees are like, okay, they're the only ones who saw it then. Because soccer players are the first ones to stop on anything. I mean, if you run around...
That's true.
If you run around like a chicken with your head cut off for as long as they do, and you're not 4 years old, you're a soccer player, or there's something medically wrong with you. Because, you know, people need to break. And that's why as soon as these guys hear a whistle, they're going to break. And if these guys kept going, I think it meant that they did not understand why there was a whistle. Or they kept playing because they thought maybe it was their imagination. There wasn't a whistle. So...
Their goalie seems to have made some really good saves, though.
And you know what? I've heard this before, too. This is another observation I made about World Cup soccer is there's one difference between United States soccer and European soccer, or I should say anywhere else in the world, is anywhere else in the world for soccer, the goalies aren't as good because soccer is so popular. People want to be the Ronaldinhos, the Pelés. They want to be the goal scorers.
Ronaldos.
Rolandinhos.
Number 10.
Is that his name? Rolandinho. He's the guy who's like the guy from Brazil who seems like the best player in the world right now.
Yeah. I don't know what his
people want to be the goal scorers, the Pelés, in other words.
Right. You know, so the goalie is like the bad position.
Yeah, exactly. So no one wants to be that guy.
You can get some glory, though, from that.
No, but from the United States... People want to be the goalie because we're such a hands-on country. What every other sport that's popular in this country is
stick and ball, or
it's very hands-on.
You get goalies get a lot of recognition.
It's very hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
It's not foot-eye coordination. I mean, who's seen as less than significant on the football field? The kicker. You know, I mean, think about it.
He only gets a few points.
Yeah, he's not even seen as part of the football team. So you look at it, in the United States, people want to be the goalie because they're already used to the hand-eye coordination. So they're already probably naturally a little better at it. So that's why I think at least we have a punter's chance. So
we'll see what happens, but the United States must win, otherwise they're done.
Yep.
They got to win and get help.
Yeah, it looks like they need to win and have the Czechs beat Italy.
No.
Is it? Yeah, I think that's the way it is.
I think Italy's got to beat the Czechs.
Italy has to beat the Czechs. Or it has to be a tie, and...
The U.S. has to win by...
The U.S. has to win by, like, 5 or 4.
Okay.
Or
yeah, because in goal differential, the United States is last in that division.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll see come Friday, probably, after the game, and then we'll see that we're no longer in it. So, anyway, let's... Jump in the stump to jump.
All right.
See what you got for me this week.
Okay. First question. It's a football question, but not soccer. How many men does a Canadian football team field?
Like the CFL?
Yeah, CFL.
I'm going to say this is a trick question. I'm going to say 11.
It could be 8-man or 9-man. Maybe even a different number.
It is a different number. 12.
Really?
Yeah. What is the X position?
I have no idea.
X receiver, probably?
I guess it's an X receiver because they do talk about it being more of a passing game.
Right, because in the end they only have 3 downs.
Yeah. I thought it was a trick question, but now that you say that, I mean...
And again, the field's significantly bigger, too.
Yeah, that's true. So...
Like, extra 20 yards, is it?
I don't know. I know, like, the end zone's twice as big.
You know, they're going to get a lot more coverage this year with Ricky being there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I agreed. And I saw Spurgeon Wynn went in. He's playing in the CFL, too, for the Args.
Really?
The Args ads.
Yeah.
Another guy drafted ahead of Tom Brady. Very nice.
And he played for the Queens.
Yes.
Because Packer fans like Spurgeon Wynn.
Yes, just like every other team in the NFL likes Joel Buckley.
here's a personal question for me. What president signed the bill for Title IX? He's a famous president.
Well, yeah.
What president?
Any president's famous.
Yeah, there's only been like 40 some of them. What president signed the bill for Title IX? Wow.
This one was interesting, though. I didn't think it was at that time.
Let's say Richard Nixon.
Correct.
I thought so.
Richard Milhouse Nixon.
I thought it was later.
I thought it was him. I thought it was Nixon that did it. Man, am I smart.
And for you, though, that's another reason to hate Nixon.
I really don't hate Nixon.
Turkey dick.
What baseball player was nicknamed the Splendid Splinter?
Well, this is,
must have been a batter of the Splinters.
No, this is... God, you know, it's like I get writer's block at about a half hour of this show. Splendid Splinter is,
dead air. That's what
yeah.
it is.
Dead
yeah.
air.
It's dead air.
I know.
Are we talking between the ears?
Wow.
I thought you would get this one a little bit.
So did I. I mean, I've only heard this 10,000 times.
Did you always say time's up?
Stan Musial.
Incorrect.
Kenny Williams.
Teddy Ballgame.
Yeah.
I got a bonus one here for you.
Ted Williams.
What is he famous for?
What's Ted Williams famous for?
Yeah.
What isn't he famous for?
Well, I know, but what? Okay, let me rephrase this question. We'll probably have to do that for the website. He was the last person to make this accomplishment.
Oh, hit 400 in a season.
Yes.
That would have been my guess anyway if you just said, oh, just guess, see if you can read my mind.
Okay, here's another question. Who managed the New York Mets to the 1969 World Series title?
Richard Nixon.
It was not Richard Nixon.
Actually, I didn't know this answer until I looked it up.
Oh. Of course you didn't.
Ended it, Brian?
Yeah.
1969 World Series. Who?
This is a legitimate baseball question.
I know it is. I have no idea, but I know it's a very famous name. Because... I mean, one of the shows I obviously listen to is Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann's on for an hour, and he's a baseball historian. I know he's mentioned his name 1,000 times.
Yes, he has.
Who is it?
Gil Hodges.
Gil Hodges. God darn it. Is that all you got? Tell me you have another one.
I have one more.
Okay, good. I gotta get this one. I actually did all right today. And it's an NHL question.
Well, of course. The Cups tonight.
I know.
Game 7 of the Cup. So I figured I got to throw at least one hockey question in there. What was the first U.S.-based team in the NHL?
Okay, I'm gonna be honest. I'm going to let the listeners out there understand my logic. It is, my logic right now is it's one of three teams. It's either the New York Islanders, New York Rangers, or the Boston Bruins. I'm going with the Boston Bruins.
You are correct.
What is your theory behind that?
I knew for a fact that the Boston Bruins are one of the original six. But I could not determine of the original six whether it was the Rangers or the Islanders, because I don't know a lot about hockey. So, having said that, I was just going to play my odds, knowing that I knew that Boston was one of them.
Right, you were incorrect on one of the teams, though, for the original six.
What?
New York Islanders.
Well, no, I said I wasn't sure that one of them were. I knew one of them wasn't.
Right.
Yeah. I knew one of them was an expansion, one of them was, or I shouldn't say, well,
one of the original six.
Yeah, one of them was and one of them wasn't.
Right.
But I knew that Boston was.
Right, every team in the league except for six is an expansion team.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I knew that one of those, I knew that Boston was, so I just played my odds. So, all right.
So there was only one U.S.-based team.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. But didn't they start at the beginning?
Of the NHL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would have been the first team that they would have brought in as an...
Oh, so they didn't all come in at the same time.
What?
I
guess I don't understand the question.
You say there's six.
Right.
So I'm thinking the other five are from Canada, then.
Nope.
So they just
What's the question?
So they just asked Boston. So they just asked Boston before they asked the other two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's a tough one then, because they played in the first season together then.
Right. They all played the first season, but the first franchise that was in the United States was Boston.
Wow, that's a tough question. I'd say.
I thought Boston held that because they're known for being, you know, like the.
Well, again, it's also a hockey town as well. I mean, it's like Detroit. It's a very much a hockey city. I mean, they got, what, two...
Excuse me. Or Minneapolis?
Yes. But even Minnesota was not one of the first six.
Well, I know, but you look at when hockey was incepted. Minnesota wasn't a great place to put a team for just for geographical purposes.
Right.
So I can understand that. I mean, it didn't take long for... University of Minnesota become the factory of hockey. I mean, look at it. Look at where...
Or even Duluth.
Exactly. Yeah. That's just it. It's like you look at where all of these great basketball teams in college are coming from. You know, a lot of them are coming now from North Carolina and all over. It's like in hockey, it's one of the best teams every year. It's always from North Dakota, and another one's always from Duluth. Think about it.
You got some good Badgers out there. Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, obviously. Wisconsin and Minnesota are two of the most populated undergrad schools in the nation, though. The Big Ten schools are by far always in the top 10, population-wise. But when you have University of North Dakota and Duluth, University of Minnesota Duluth in there, that says that you have a good hockey...
Smaller school.
Yeah, you have good hockey following. Yeah. So,
all right. What else to do up there?
Except for play hockey. Yeah, it's cold 11 months of the year.
And curled.
But let's jump into the five questions. This is where I start talking again. Actually, not right now. Oh, yeah, I got these questions emailed to me. Thank you to whoever decided to write me a book. Yeah. Okay, first question. I think there are too many rules in sports and not enough arguments. That is, the managers, coaches, and drivers have meetings before the events to lay these things out. The meetings allow these rules to adapt to the event and not support the league for example, the play of the ball off speakers in the Metrodome, the speed of the game, the racetrack. The officials can determine the safe drafting and passing. Having said all that, are there any gentlemen's agreements that need to become rules? This is another great thinker's question from Kipper in Minnesota. Do you guys have any off the top of your head? Because I have one.
Well, I know that on the way to the wedding, I talked to you about the whole off the speaker thing.
Yes.
With Ortiz hitting the speaker in center field. I'm like, so if they would have caught that, he would have been out.
Yeah.
But he clocked the ball and hit a speaker that nobody else has ever hit before, I don't believe.
Actually, yeah, I think it's happened like a half a dozen times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because that thing is way up there.
I know.
In center field.
But they said that a number of people hit it. One person hit it, and actually it went through some like venting in the dome. And it went actually out.
Oh, yeah. There's like little holes there, like, I don't know, about a foot across.
Yeah.
And a baseball can get stuck up in there.
Yeah.
What a million shot, Doc.
And it's happened once. So,
and how many balls have been hit? A million, maybe? It's one in a million.
It's not as... I mean, it's known as the inflatable toilet.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
Not off the top of my head. I know that, again, there are gentlemen's rules.
I'm just saying that should have been a home run.
It probably should.
With hitting the speaker. That speaker should be considered home run territory.
I think it should be ground rule double.
Oh, come on.
I think it's a ground rule double.
If you can hit that speaker, it's definitely going to go out of the outfield.
I think that I mean,
gentlemen.
To answer Kipper's question though,
just like in golf.
To answer Kipper's question though, should there be any of the gentlemen's rules out there?
Yes.
Or first of all, I think that if you hit a batter in the head in baseball, whether it was intentional or not, you should be thrown out of the game.
Sure. should be.
If you are a professional pitcher and you cannot control your pitch to the point where you hit a batter, then I don't care if it's unintentional. It's just like in football when you do a low block. If your intention was to do a low block, but you didn't, you know, intend on the guy falling over and you get, you know, a 15-yard penalty. If your intention was to pitch inside and you hit the guy in the head, and your intention was to throw inside but you hit the guy in the head, you know, tough, you missed it. You're out of the game. I don't care if you have a no-hitter going. I don't care what the deal is.
That's a tough one, though.
Now, I think if you hit a guy in the head, you should be thrown out of the game.
Because you got some guys that are so off that day that you throw behind the batter.
Yes, which means that they should not pitch. Which means then that they shouldn't pitch that day.
Every once in a while, that happens.
They're going to get yanked very, very quickly anyway if they're not hitting the target.
But I'm trying to answer Kipper's question here, and I think it's a very good question. And I think, is there any, you know, rules? I think that, and I'm trying to keep this to the point where, can you make rules during the course of an event, game, race, whatever?
NASCAR changes the rules every week.
Yeah, but they do penalize drivers for doing things during a race that people don't know about. There's a lot of times, I mean, they'll suspend you and make you sit in a pit for...
You ran over your gas man's foot, and so now you have to re-pit.
No,
I learned that one. I'm like, wow.
If you stall your engine, you have to go back behind the line. Or if you come into your pit and you go behind your line, you have to turn off your engine, go back, do all this stuff, and
they push you back, right?
Yeah, that's how Danica Patrick really lost the Indianapolis 500 2 years ago. You know, I mean, I'm sure Kipper will correct me on this, but I know it has something to do with that. He's more of a motorhead than I am, a gear nut than I am, but. I know it had something to do with some technical problem that she had made. But I know that they make a lot of rules adjustments for things like this, and I'm all for it. But I think that there needs to be more, you know, of these quote-unquote gentlemen's rules that are turned into, you know, real rules. I don't think that a lot of them should be, you know, if you're up by 15, you shouldn't shoot threes. Or if you're up by, you know, 20 or more points less than 2 minutes ago, you shouldn't be going for points in a football game. I don't think it should be anything like that. That's, you know, up to hate. I mean, that's, if someone does that, let the fans hate the person who did it. That shouldn't be a rule.
I would agree with adding a lot more gentleman agreements in a lot of different sports.
Yeah.
Just because it's, I don't know, it's cordial. It's
nice. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of one right now off the top of my head, and I'm drawing a blank. I'm trying to think of one for football, like a gentleman's agreement that you would have in football. Like, a chop block is one, hitting the quarterback below the knees.
You never tackle, like, a punter. Like, a nasty hit. Have you ever seen somebody try and take the punter's head off? Like, on blocking him?
Right, no, that doesn't happen. I mean,
well,
yeah.
I've seen it a couple times where it's like...
Yeah, but what they do is...
he's, like, half your size and you're just...
All they do is they'll give a forearm shiver because they know that they're going to get the same effect and it makes them look tougher.
You've seen a couple hits that's like, they're just trying to take him out.
Yeah. But that's what they're doing. They're not trying to give them... They're trying to make them look bad by giving them the weakest hit possible. You know what I mean? They're trying to go like this as hard as possible. If they really wanted to lay a guy out, they would.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times.
Yeah.
That's just wrong for somebody that's 300 pounds to pick on somebody that's 150 pounds.
Yeah.
Also, too, maybe about taking out the receiver, catching the punt. You know, with a fair catch.
Yeah.
You know, just go ahead.
Well, now they have that halo rule.
They do have the halo rule. But somebody who's like... I'm going to take the 15-yard penalty and I'm going to put this person out of the game.
Yeah. That's a good point.
There's a lot you can have for quarterbacks, too.
That's a good point. Because that would apply to the hack-a-shack rule in basketball. They were doing it last night. I was watching the game last night, and my fiancé was asking me, why do they keep following him? I said, because he's terrible at free throws. Why are they following him? Like, because think about it. They're following him as soon as they get across the half-court line, and he has to shoot the free throws. They do it before the 2 minute warning, they'll get the ball back more often than not. And because he's not going to make his free throws. If they take the chances, they got that little guy, number three, who's probably going to make the points.
That little guy.
Yeah. And all, you know, I'm trying
in
to explain.
In comparison to
Dwayne Wade.
Shaq.
Yeah. Like, that little guy is going to make his shots. Or he's going to power into the basket, feed it to the big guy, he's going to dunk it. But if they follow him right away, they're going to put him on the line, he's going to miss his free throws, and they're going to get the ball back. They can do that up until the 2 minute warning. And she said the coolest thing to me, for a girl who doesn't watch A, a lot of basketball, and B, does not watch any sports unless I'm watching it. And I guarantee you she's going to watch NHL tonight because she is a hockey fan, grew up in Minnesota. She said these exact words to me. Why doesn't the coach take him out of the game?
And many times that's what he does. So.
Yep, and the coach took, and Pat Riley took him out of the game right after that. I said, see, look, sweetie, coach is listening to you. And I said, he'll put him right back in the game right after the 2-minute warning. So she was right. And, you know, it's like, it's something that it's like, it's so obvious, but it's like so hard to do. How do you take a 300-something-pound, 7-foot-1 guy off the court, you know, in that situation?
Was he hitting his free throws?
He was 2-14 last night.
Oh, okay.
So
they lost?
No, they won by 1 in overtime.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to game 6 tomorrow night with Miami up 3-2.
So it's going to finish in...
That's why I didn't talk about it today, because I knew you didn't watch it. So let's go question number 2.
Okay.
I want you to scroll down because this is another long one. That's good enough.
What's the time? Okay.
Time on the clock? We got plenty of time.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, why don't you just... Yeah, there we go. All right. Okay. Talk about exaggerated numbers. I remember when scouts would tell you that Deion Sanders and Vance Johnson clocked at 4.19, which was astounding. It was so impossible. When Ben Johnson won the 100-meter dash in 1988 Olympics... or race he forfeited when he flunked a drug test, he finished in 9.79 seconds and scorched the first 50 meters in 5.56 seconds. Experts who broke down this race into 10-meter increments estimated he went through the 40 meters in 4.38 seconds. Johnson was notoriously a fast starter. He was on spikes. He was on a fast track. And he had a slight tailwind. Yet, NFL scouts would have you believe Deion or Vance was faster. Hey, at this year's scouting combine, they had a tight end, Vernon Davis, clocked at 4.4 with two estimates of 4.38. I know he's fast for his size, but let me ask you, who wins in a 40? Ben Johnson, who I think it's implied here to say, Ben Johnson on steroids, or Vernon Davis. Thank you. This is from Anonymous. So this person did not put a name in, which is perfectly okay. So, do you think it's a little skewed?
Yes.
Okay.
It is skewed.
Are these electronically timed?
These are time.
Leave the map.
These are time of the guy with a stopwatch.
They are.
They have a guy.
Those aren't meaningless anymore. Meaningless.
Yeah. However, if I understand the combine correctly, they do have the same guy who does all of them. Okay. Who has no vested interest.
It's known that they are way off.
But they're skewed for everyone then. They're not like, I don't know if a lot of people know this, that, for example, like, in a swim meet, when swimmers start, and as soon as the horn goes off, the clock goes off, they're synchronized together.
Okay.
And their clock stops when their hand touches this pad. So there's no human element involved.
Okay.
It's all done with computers. This is all done with the element of human error involved. So I like having the human element involved. I would just like them to say, Vernon Davis is fast for a guy his size.
Yes.
It'd be a lot nicer for them to say it that way. So
when I was in track in college, we had to do the 40. We had to do it 3 times, and we left off a pad, and there was a laser beam at the end that we'd have to break it and shut it off. And we all had to do it, even us distance guys. I did it, and my fastest time was 5 flat, which is, I'm not a terrible starter, but I was just like, man, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But that's electronically timed. And our sprinter, who constantly was winning, he almost got drafted in the NFL, actually.
Okay.
Because he was also a receiver. He was just a little short. So he was a lot like...
Was this a school in Nebraska?
Yeah, what Nebraska was.
Okay.
And his time, electronically, was 4.5, which I thought was like, wow, that's way off, because he was so fast. So fast.
I'm not... I don't have any knowledge of this firsthand. I mean, like I said earlier, when I made that earlier comparison, my dad was doing our times and we had to do our stuff in football. And when my dad was doing the clock with the hand and he did my 40 time during football, you know, I knew I was slow when he was yawning at the end of mine.
Did he pull out a calendar?
No, but he did not pull out a calendar. But for some reason, there are no seconds on his watch. I think it is skewed. I think it's skewed to benefit the naive public.
Okay.
But, I mean, you obviously think it's skewed.
Yeah.
So, I enjoyed the question. I enjoyed the person who sent it, whoever the person is, because they think that's okay.
All right.
Where is this?
Next question.
Mauer.
Question number 3. Right now, Joe Mauer is hitting 380 for the Twins, and nobody thinks he can get the 400 because he's a catcher and he will wear down. Do you give Joe Mauer a chance at 400? This is from Kurt in Jenks, Oklahoma. I'd like to give Kurt credit for bringing up a Minnesota topic. Personally, I think that if Justin Morneau keeps batting the way he does, and if Torii Hunter stays healthy, and the guys around Joe Mauer keep playing the way they do, I think he's got a puncher's chance at it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he has a shot.
Do you think it's... Yeah, but do you think... From everyone that ever talks about it...
Just because of the fact that he plays catcher.
Everyone says that. Everyone says because he's a catcher and because he's going to need... A, he's going to wear down, and he's going to be too tired...
But he does have a backup, which kind of helps him in a way.
Yeah, but he's got another position to play. It's not like you're going to put him at DH.
Yeah, but every now and then, Joe Mauer can take the night off and recover.
Like he did on Sunday.
From a few bumps and bruises that he gets during the game. And if he doesn't get injured during the course of the year, he's got a shot. But I saw his progression from 360 to 380, and that was difficult.
Yeah.
And he was just on a tear.
The highest I've seen him... is 386. And actually now I gotta give your mother-in-law credit. Your mother-in-law actually corrected me on Friday morning. I thought he was betting 383. And she goes, Greg, I just looked in the paper, he's betting 381 right now. I felt like a jackass. I'll be honest with you. This nice...
She knows her baseball.
She knows her Twins baseball.
She knows her Twins baseball.
She, that lady, knows more about Twins baseball than anyone else I know. I gotta give her credit.
So she carried the Twins out in Nebraska?
No.
My mother-in-law.
Oh, mother-in-law. Okay.
Yes. And not only did she know Twins baseball, she wanted to know my opinion about what they were going to do with Jason Kubel when Shannon Stewart came back. That is a question that, you know, Bert Blyleven isn't even talking about
yet. He's coming back this week,
isn't he? Yeah. I mean, Bert Blyleven isn't even talking about that yet, and he gets paid. I mean, I'm sure he is, but you know what I mean. I mean, you got Karen already worried about that. So...
When was the last time someone hit over 400 in baseball?
It was Ted Williams. I think it was in the 50s.
1941.
41, okay.
So I just don't see it happening because
There's been so many players that have given it that run at it, though.
Like Tony Gwynn, Rod Carew.
Don Manley had a shot at it 1 year for a while up until the All-Star break.
And then what's his face in KC?
George Brett.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, guys do have those runs at it, and the thing is I think the biggest thing that helps these guys out is having the supporting cast around them, and it's the same reason why Ichiro will never get there. Ichiro doesn't take walks. I think Joe Mauer is patient enough at the plate to take walks, where you're going to get enough plate appearances, you're going to get enough looks at pitches to know what a pitcher's giving you to be able to get hits.
Right. If you have a good people right around you in the batting order, they're gonna have to pitch to you.
Yeah. Especially if you're not a Barry Bonds from 2003, 2002, 2001, where you're hitting them out of the park every other at bat. You know, they're gonna pitch to you because they're willing to take their shot. What's the worst you can do? Hit a single. You know. So, having said that, let's I think he's got a shot. You don't think he does. You think he'll break down? What do you think?
I don't think he'll get it, but I'd like to see it happen.
I'd like to see him. I mean, honestly, if he does do it, I'm very proud of the fact that it came from not only a guy from the Twins, but a hometown Minnesota guy. But I just want to see the run. I want to see him get into September where people are starting talking about what he needs to do this game, this game, and this game. I'd like to see him make that run. So,
move on. He does it.
Alright, number four.
Oh, you already got it up. Cool.
Yep.
Okay. Major League Baseball has not decided yet how to determine the home field advantage for the World Series. Would you continue with this with the winning league in the All-Star game, or do you guys have a different idea? This is from Andy in Evansville, Indiana. Thanks, Andy. I don't know if you guys knew this. I just heard this last week, or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, that... Yeah, like they only had like a 2 year or like a 1 year deal on this or 2 year deal on this or whatever it was, and they like renewed it for a year. But as of right now, there is no like agreement on how they're going to determine home field advantage.
Okay, what happened to like every other sport except for football, which plays on neutral sites for the championship team with the best record? I know it's kind of you know
it may not be on a neutral site every time though, because.
No, the playoffs
is there's going to be a team that is going to host it, though.
Right. Yeah, it's only happened once.
Yeah, but it could happen.
Yeah.
I thought it's never happened.
It's only happened once. Can you name it?
Tampa Bay?
Yep. The only time it's ever happened. It was actually the day before I started my job up here. I was actually staying in a hotel room watching the Super Bowl. Anyway, I think they should do it with the All-Star game. I actually enjoy that because with that, they also added another player to the lineup. I also think that with that said, what they should be allowed to do, and they should say this in their agreements, is you can bring a player back into a game, in the All-Star game.
Yeah, that I want to see happen because it's like what happened back in 2002 or 2003 in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think it was 2002. I think that should happen. I think that... If a situation, I think that
that should have never happened.
Well, no, that wasn't Bud Selig's fault, and
that's management's fault, or
what's that?
What is that?
That's nobody's fault. That's nobody's fault.
That should have never happened.
Though. It should have no. I don't think it's anybody's fault. You can't blame the managers for wanting to get all the players in the game.
Yeah.
And you can't blame Bud Selig for wanting the fans of baseball to want to see all the players they voted on.
Sure. Right.
So you can't blame anybody for that. Having said that. Why can't they make a decision and say, okay, except for pitchers. I understand if you don't want to bring a pitcher back in a game, I understand that.
But let's add two or three more people to the roster then, or add five for a nice easy figure, just so that they can
They added another player. So you're going to want to get these guys in so players play less. Let's say that Jeff Kent's playing second base, and because you have two other second basemen, you play him four innings. He gets two at-bats. Then you bring in so-and-so, and he plays five innings. He gets two, three at-bats. Then the game starts going into extra innings, and all of a sudden you got manager of so-and-so's team that's saying, hey, you know, I don't want this guy getting worn out. Bring Jeff Kent back in the game. And if the game goes a little longer, make sure that guy's still loose. You know, you got or do what's the guy's name? Billy Hall from the Brewers.
A utility.
Why not bring in... Why not make, you know, a position that 30th guy that they keep talking about on All-Star teams? Why not make him a utility player? Billy Hall would be a perfect guy that the National League could have. I'm sure the American League. I can't think of him off the top of my head.
He plays for the Sean Figgins for the Angels.
Okay, bring him in. Make him your All-Star. Make 29 guys and a utility player. It'd be a great thing to do. Because then you can keep that guy off to the side with the idea that this is the utility player. He will come into a game as needed in said position where it's needed. You know, and if second base is needed and that means that Jeff Kent will have to move to first base, well, Jeff Kent's played first base before. And then Billy Hall could play first base. I mean, sorry, Jeff Kent could play first base, Billy Hall would play second base because he knows how to do it. You know, I'm saying that, give me the time. And just saying that, you can make adjustments like that. So okay. I think that's the best way to do it. So, so we're the fifth question. Right. Oh, you moved the wrong way.
I know. I
there we go. Okay. Here we go. This is from our old buddy Rich in St. Louis. Thank you once again, Rich. We are now at the part of interleague play where some people really don't care. Where people really don't care for. No rivalries, no city battles, etc. Since teams are now going to stadiums they have never been to before, which one stadium that you've never been to before would you want to go see your favorite team play at? It's from Rich, like I said.
Wrigley.
You want to go to Wrigley?
Wrigley.
Would you want to see the Twins in Wrigley? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Twins play the Cubbies?
Yep.
Oh, you call.
Unfortunately, the Cubbies are coming here to play.
I know, is that funny?
Go from, you know, one of the best stadiums to watch a baseball game to one of the worst, yep. Or the worst. For me, well, again, Wrigley would probably be a place to see. I want to see it, but again, I'm a Brewers fan.
I've been to Wrigley, so.
I haven't been to Wrigley. Wrigley, I'd also like to see Boston.
Okay.
And and New York.
Okay.
Those are the three right off the top of my head. The old ballparks.
Yeah. That's one of those things that the mystique of baseball is still living.
Right. Right. It's like, you know, again, if I wanted to go to the Bob, I could just go to Miller Park and it's the same.
Yeah.
You know, like it'll be for the parks themselves and not the teams.
Some of the newer ones are kind of cool, though, too, in a different way, though.
I want to go to Fenway, just because Fenway is one I missed out on when I was out east. I had to head back early for work, and a lot of my buddies went out to Fenway, and I because of my work schedule, I couldn't work it out. That's one that I really regret not going to. But other than that, I really would like to go. I'd like to go see the Little League World Series sometime in Williamsport,
okay.
Pennsylvania. That would be nice too. That's not professional, but that's something, you know, that's like going to see a game in Cooperstown.
What about Omaha, Nebraska?
Omaha's another one. See,
that's one I would like to go
yeah,
see.
Yeah, I like to go
see. There. You, times, actually.
Of course you have.
Since I was only like an hour away when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I think we should road trip and do a podcast.
Podcast from the College World Series next year?
Yes.
My parents would love to host everybody.
That'd be cool. We should plan that for next year. Do an episode of Twist One from outside of the College World Series. That'd be cool, because we'll have all the video casting up by then.
That would be cool.
Yeah. So,
sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah. So, all right. We'd like to regret in advance for next week. Brian won't be here. So, be a lot of stumbling and bubbling around.
Oh, yeah.
But for now, episode 38's off. And please keep sending those questions in. Stump the Chumps, 5 questions. Any comments you have on anything? We enjoy all of it. We appreciate all of it. Send more. And we'll see Brian back. Brian's going on his hiatus. See you soon. Take care.